hear me? Good, loud, okay. All right, we'll go ahead and get started. Thanks everybody for coming in. My name is Jake Strawn, creator of the Omega theme, Drupal module, handful of other things. Today we're going to be talking about what I consider the future of Drupal theming. And some background on me, I was actually a developer 10 or more years ago, learning PHP, MySQL, and I couldn't design to save my life. It was, you know, one of those when developers design kind of nightmares. And actually, once I discovered Drupal, I kind of was able to get away from coding. It was easier to start putting together sites quickly. So I turned my focus, my passion, to theming, to making sites beautiful, to learning how to design and, you know, not do everything in awesome table-based layouts and things like that. So what we're going to really cover today, some of the new buzzwords that are not really Drupal-centric, but are really just emerging in the web in general. Responsive design, adaptive layouts, and then the HTML5, CSS3 kind of all just play into that. So the first thing we want to talk about is mobile. And as anybody should know, and a quick question, how many people here in the 10 minutes prior to this session actually used their laptop? And how many used a mobile device, tablet, something like that? Fair enough. And that's a pretty accurate representation of the web in general right now. Everybody has a smartphone. Everybody has a tablet. Everybody is starting to use smaller and smaller devices on the go to view web content. And if we're not thinking about that now, and the mobile web has been there for quite a while, and m.verizon.com, or, you know, a very tailored site for a mobile device or a mobile app, those have been around for a while, but we have to start focusing on mobile first. It's the most prevalent and is becoming more so way that people are accessing any of the content on the web. And when it comes to devices, not everybody currently is on a smartphone. While smartphones currently give us the ability to view a web page that wasn't even designed for mobile, and your iPhone or your Android is going to shrink it up, you know, and it's going to look awesome, and you're going to be able to pinch and zoom and get in to see what you need, still about 65% of people across the world are using feature phones, the phones that most of us in a more tech community probably stopped using 2 to 4 years ago. But so the most common phone is the feature phone that has a much less capable browser, potentially some of the older ones still don't even display CSS properly, some don't support JavaScript, so we're dealing with still a huge percentage of the market that is on a very weak mobile experience. For those of us that have an iPhone or Android, you know, we get something just so much better, and that is where things are going. But currently still, it's about 35% worldwide have smartphones, and the other 65% feature phones. On some studies, they're saying that it's supposed to be by the end of this year that it would actually be 50-50. Smartphones would take up now half. And that's all well and good, but that still leaves out 50%. So some ways to start going about, you know, trying to figure out what, you know, what your target audience is using, user agent detection. And this is what's been around for years, and this is what will redirect you when you go to a certain site to the m.dot or slash mobile version of a website. And it is truly an improper way in which to handle this. There are, the last time I looked, I want to say the article I read said tens of thousands of user agents from every version of Firefox to every version of a BlackBerry OS. Everything has its own user agent. So when you're trying to use something, maybe some of you use the BrowseCap module that will, on the Drupal side in PHP, give you an accurate representation that, hey, they are on a BlackBerry running this version of the OS, which has this version of the browser. And that's great data to have. That's useful in some circumstances. But instead of doing it this way, what we really need to be thinking about is the capabilities of that device. I really don't care if it's a BlackBerry, if it's an iPhone, if it's a Motorola flip phone from 5 years ago. All I really want to know is how big their screen is. How many, what ratio of color support does it have? So in comes the mobile-first concept that has really become a big push in the last year of the web. And back to the problem at hand is that in the past, building a website, designing a website, all we think about is, well, we got a comp that was done in 960 or maybe it's 1,000 pixels wide, and that's all we have. That's what we build first, and then after the project is wrapped up or phase two, they're like, oh, we really need to do something for our mobile users. You know, that would be great. But what we need to do is build for the lowest common denominator. And much like in the past when, you know, and hopefully not many of you still have to, but when we were so worried about IE6 and making sure that things were properly represented to those users, well, what about the mobile device? That's actually the lowest common denominator. I mean, in that IE6 scenario, we used to kind of, you know, maybe dumb down the CSS and, you know, make sure everything laid out properly in IE6 and then move forward. And if we started at the advanced CSS3 that Firefox and Chrome and Safari can handle and then worried about IE6, you had a lot of headache, a lot of struggles to patch up those bugs, to do some IE hacks to make things render properly. So if you're thinking from the ground up, today you need to be thinking about the mobile device. What is somebody on a 320 pixel wide screen going to see? And you start there and build up. The basic reasons for this, as I explained, mobile is exploding. Mobile users are going to be a billion users by the end of next year. And the adoption of mobile, kind of with a show of hands, more people are picking up and buying mobile devices than they are desktop computers or even laptops. The smartphone sales will surpass PC sales by the end of this year. So right now, you know, every day there's as many iPhones and Androids being bought as there are Dells and Macs and PC systems. Over half of the Android and iPhone smartphone users spend at least half an hour a day, and I'd be willing to bet with the people that raise their hand that you all fit well into that category. Designing for mobile first, it forces you to focus on what is important, on what are you trying to convey to your audience. When we used to look at, I remember designing for the days when still at least half of the people were using an 800 by 600 resolution. And then we're like, how many are using 1024? When can I shift my design up to be bigger? Oh, and now that I have, you know, most people on a desktop or a laptop at least have room for 1200 pixels. How much can I fit on that screen? And so you just continue to clutter up your designs, clutter up your content by throwing as many things into a comp as you can. If you're looking at the mobile first, you're focusing on what is the most important. The three navigation items that are the big point that anybody on a mobile device wants to hit. Your content comes quickly on the page. And it also then extends what you're able to do moving forward and growing from the mobile onto the desktop and tablets. So which brings us to responsive web design. What is responsive? And this only really became prevalent about a year ago. Ethan Marcotte defined responsive web design as the practice of using fluid grids, flexible images, and media queries to enhance the web page for different viewing context. And that's all well and good. This was groundbreaking. The response from it was amazing, and everybody kind of agrees. This is where we're going. This is what we need to be doing. The only problem is for a while, if you weren't using a fluid grid, well, that's not responsive. That's adaptive. Or there's still confusion even on what the two of those definitions are, but essentially they are the same. And about a month and a half, 2 months ago, Jeffrey Zeldman posted a blog after 6 months or a year of Ethan's initial concept had kind of been tossed around the web and all this bickering was going on of what these definitions are. Again, if it's not a fluid grid, you're not using responsive web design. But that's not really the case. And what he kind of points out here is that what we need to focus on is the end goal. I don't care if you use CSS3. I don't care if you use some kind of JavaScript. I don't care how you accomplish it, as long as we're getting to the same goal in the end. So to demonstrate responsive, we'll take a look at a couple examples, first that are not Drupal. One of the first sites that was truly responsive and beautiful, Simon Collision, or Collison, excuse me. And as you saw the screenshots come up, this is at the same domain, and you can test these out. It's actually better in Chrome because you can scroll it down to 400 pixels. The desktop layout had, you know, the four primary boxes in line, and as you continue to get smaller, the one on the right is actually, I believe, like an iPad in portrait mode. Around 800 pixels is going to get you a two column, and then as you move down to mobile, everything shrinks down and is just stacked up nicely and presented in a way that the content's still there, but you still get the exact same content and the exact same site delivered. One of the first really graphical sites that came up was the Sasquatch Music Festival. And they have a similar approach. They did not use anything fluid. They're set breakpoints here. But you can see how graphically heavy this is. And on this last mobile version, we can see that the navigation actually changed down to 4 items. And this is where the mobile-first thought comes in, because for something like this, and this would go for a Drupal camp, a Drupal con, if you're on your mobile device, what do you want to get to first? Schedule. Don't care about anything else. That's the only reason I hit this page on this day with my mobile device. So they've slimmed down their navigation for the mobile device to really focus on, again, the forces you to focus. Focus on what was important, where on the large thing they also have the partners link and the contact us page that just aren't what people are trying to use or trying to accomplish when on a mobile device potentially. Well, Drupal can do that too. And there's a few examples here of this. The first one that really came out was 4kitchens.com, and this was their homegrown version that has the desktop layout and is using a fluid layout. So as you scroll down, the primary boxes, performance and scalability, systems architecture, they continue to shrink and become two columns. Then as you get down to the mobile, everything stacks and it becomes one. And we can see here, too, a little bit of change on the navigation as well. Once you get down to potentially a touch device, a tablet or a mobile, the links become bigger, become more easy to click than the small links that we see on a desktop version. One of my own, the Omega Microsite, now has a 1200 pixel layout, a fluid layout, and then also a mobile first that will work well, I think, below 480 pixels. Everything stacks. Certain content is put away and kind of tucked back that you don't need to see. Certain headers are gone. This was one also done using Omega by Amazi Labs. I forget where they're based out of in Europe. This was truly one of the first things outside of my own creativity that somebody really did something amazing. And this KMUBusinessPartners.ch is fluid as well. And you know, you see the nice photograph of the gentleman in the back, and you know, it's graphically pleasing on a desktop. As you scroll it down, he shrinks a little, then he goes away. It's not important. You don't need that on the mobile device. But everything scales down to a mobile device perfectly. Another one I did is the Drupal Camp New Hampshire site. It's actually coming up next month, not September 45th, but like October 29th. And this one has four separate breakpoints, which are 1,200 pixels, 960, 720, and a mobile version. And I actually didn't spend really any time on a design for mobile, but I just simplified it to kind of make it more accessible. So you can see, like, on the desktop and even tablet versions, the little Mac replica menu bar at the top. Well, that's great if you're on a mouse, and it's kind of cute and all, but if you're on a mobile device, you're never going to be able to click those. So the navigation grew to quite an amount to be able to be clicked on. The featured speaker rotator that you see on the left goes away. It's not really important on the mobile device. Another one that came in, Acquia.com. And to date, it's not really the best example of responsive. They adopted the Omega base theme for their projects internally and actually had a time constraint to get a rebrand of their website out the door. So they have the desktop version that's, I believe, the 960. And the second screenshot has just a few enhancements when you come down to a tablet size. A few things shift with some fluid properties. And I know they do have the intention, as time allows, to go back and really push in the mobile version and some more responsive enhancements. So how do we get there? How do we actually start using it now? How do we make the sites that we build responsive? The JavaScript method. Nathan Smith, who I'm a huge fan of, also built the 960GS, has created adapt.js. And I believe it comes out of the box with 1200, 960, 720, maybe a 400 pixel grid. I forget the exact sizes. There's three or four different layouts, all based on the 960 concepts. And so what adapt.js does is ask you resize your browser, the onresize event, every time you're scrolling the screen, and it also will happen on load, detects the size of your browser window, and then loads the appropriate grid CSS based on that. The benefits of this, it works in all browsers that have JavaScript enabled. This isn't potentially great for a mobile-first approach. When we look at old feature phones that may not have JavaScript, not potentially the best solution. The CSS3 method. We're all familiar with media queries, even if you don't know it yet. Since the start of CSS2, we've had media all screen, print, projector, all those things that allowed us to serve different style sheets based on the viewing context. In CSS3, media queries added quite a few, and I'll only touch on essentially the min and max width, quite a few properties that allowed us to now dig deeper into the device that was viewing the page. So there's min width, min device width, and max device width. And they will essentially work in all modern browsers. IE 6, 7, and 8 definitely do not work out of the box with the CSS3 support. Most new smart and feature phones do understand media queries, and those that don't simply ignore them. So what the min width, for example, media query allows us to do is say media all and minimum width of 700 pixels. Here's a style sheet. Here's the styles we want to apply. So it allows you to go and put all these in for the different sizes of screens that you want. With the CSS method kind of leaving out the older versions of IE, the JavaScript method may be having some shortcomings on the mobile-first approach or somebody that disables JavaScript, you can combine the methods. And if you're using the CSS3 media queries to deliver deliver the setup and the structure for your responsive layout. Respond.js is quite popular. I have not personally worked with it, but I know plenty of people who have said it works great, works out of the box. And so what it does is a polyfill that will make other browsers that don't, it'll make them that don't understand media queries act like they do. So it'll make IE6 pretend like it actually understands CSS3. So which of those methods is right? And we could take up probably the rest of the hour, 45 minutes here, talking about this portion. And it really depends on the client. It depends on you. It depends on what's still important to you as a designer, as a developer, when you're implementing a site. Is IE6 still important? To me, it's not. I really don't care. And I don't take clients who do care. So for me, I can rely simply on the CSS3 method and provide some kind of default page for any of that older stuff. I don't need somebody in IE6 able to scroll their window. But it really falls back to your client. What's important to them? What's their target audience? You know, for something that's internal on a company that's still nothing but IE6, they probably wouldn't be really investigating anything about responsive design to begin with, so you may not still have to worry about it. Now, implementing these now in Drupal. About 2 years ago now, I started building the Omega Base theme. And at the time, it was simply a 960 grid theme that had a cool little interface that made it so anybody could kind of adjust the sizes of regions and position things on page however they wanted. Over the last couple of years, it's really grown. And since DrupalCon Chicago, I actually had a guy, Sebastian, who is actually going to medical school in Austria, but Drupal's in his spare time, and took a passion with Omega and saw that, oh man, this is great. There's a lot of cool stuff here, but I think I can help out. So I've had the help of a very passionate contributor that has helped take this to new heights, essentially. So let's go through a few of the features in Omega that will get you to responsive. Out of the box, it has a 1,200 pixel, 960 pixel, 720 pixel, and a fluid grid by default. And you can customize each of the media queries that provides these layouts. It's all set up with like a default install where the 1,200 pixel grid is turned on and any screen greater than 1,220 pixels, giving a little space, will use that. Does have a mobile-first approach. The first thing that is loaded is a global style sheet that has all the default styles site-wide, but specifically in this case for mobile. The performance has been enhanced. In the Omega theme, there's been a lot of pre-process functions, a lot of crazy stuff always going on the back end. And as it got more and more feature-rich, it did get a little bit slower. And this is one of the great places that Sebastian helped out and was able to take, I think, 300 lines of code that I wrote and turn it down to about 2 that went really quick. So there's a lot of advanced caching, less looping, and clever CSS aggregation. When using media queries in Drupal, there's a few ways you can implement those if you're just writing them into your style sheet, or with Drupal Add CSS, you can actually put in the appropriate media query. And if you do it that way with the Drupal Add CSS method, for each different media query you have, you get an extra group in the head element of with all the style sheets. And so with 4 layouts essentially on by default in Omega, that was a lot of extra style sheets getting included. When you turn on CSS aggregation in Omega, or in Drupal, Omega will take and aggregate all of that into one file, which makes it quicker to load, all those kind of things. Omega introduced zones, which, for those of you familiar with the 960 grid, there's the container element and the grid element. all of the regions, the content, the sidebar, those are grid elements that have a specified size. A zone is essentially a wrapper around those. That's the container element that gets that 12-column, 16-column assigned to it. And the zone implementation in Omega made it so that in the grid, you're essentially grouping these regions together. And this gave the ability to have a wrapper around it visually in the interface so that you've got 8 regions in a zone. Now you can move that zone somewhere else. So if you look at a page TPL in Omega or a subtheme thereof, there's really barely anything in it. We print out a header, section, and a footer for the HTML5 versions. And all of the zones and regions are placed inside of that through the interface. Also have the ability, using other 960 methods, to make a region display different in the source order than it does on the page visually. So your content, which should usually always come first for SEO, and then when we look at mobile, it should be at the top. That should come first in your source order, but maybe because of your design, you actually want to put that on the right side. Omega introduced some new items to the .info that actually provide quite a bit of flexibility without PHP coding in the theme to do something advanced. There's CSS libraries and grids. The CSS and libraries allow you to, they're essentially a little bit of an extra wrapper for DrupalAdd CSS and DrupalAdd JS, and allows you to put in a description, put in with a JavaScript file that you're including, maybe a jQuery cycle. You can then attach the appropriate CSS right there with that, the same way you could in PHP with DrupalAdd JS. The grids element allows you now, despite the 4 default layouts that come in Omega, it allows you to define your own grid. And the site in the background is the one that's linked off of 960GS. And so everybody's complaint with grids, whether it's 960 or Blueprint, is, I don't want 960 pixels. My wireframe is 987, which I'm not going to say that's great, but you can implement your own grid structure based on the 960. So you could make a 566 or 76 pixel wide grid and implement that in an Omega subtheme with just a few lines of code and the CSS file. Not really an important feature, but one that I swear there were 500 issue queues on this because of all the themes that had it, and they're like, why don't you? Equal height regions and blocks are now available. So when you have the zone wrapper and 3 or 4 regions inside of that, you can set all the regions to be the same height, or you can take an individual region and set all the blocks inside of that to be an equal height. With the latest version, the theme settings has become much simpler while still adding in potentially hundreds more configuration options. The goal with what I've always been trying to do was make something simple that you did not have to be an advanced coder to understand. When you hand a site off to a client, what if a month later, like, that sidebar's not wide enough? I just want it a little bit wider. You can quickly click one thing, and as long as your CSS was done appropriately, you can change the width of the content and the sidebar, and it's done. Some of the sites that are currently using Omega. Not all of these are Drupal 7 or responsive. Maximum PC, Mac Life, Guitar World, a couple that I did. Go figure. The KMU, that's a great responsive theme. Drupal Camp New Hampshire, and Acquia. Now, mobile first, responsive, all of these concepts are great. They're the latest and greatest. It's what everybody thinks it's supposed to be now, or where we should be going. And there's some places where Drupal falls short. And I use that loosely because it's not just Drupal. It's the web in general. Any platform you will use will have this problem, whether it's WordPress or some proprietary CMS. The goal is, and there's actually another initiative that may have an initiative leader soon, but the essential problem is that on the Drupal side, on the PHP side, we don't have the knowledge. We can use the device detection. We can figure out, yep, they're using a BlackBerry 5, and it's got the crappy old version of the OS. We can figure that out. But with responsive, we want to be focused on the capabilities, the screen size. There's not currently that capability in Drupal 7. There's the URFL, W-U-R-F-L module that is for Drupal 6. There's a dev version now for 7, which essentially takes device detection and an advanced external library. And it figures out that, yes, you're using a BlackBerry of this version, and then now cross-references that against the database that says that has a 240-pixel wide resolution and gets us the data that we need potentially on the PHP side. Because like the examples I showed you, especially the Drupal ones, if you have an advanced design for your large desktop screen layout, well, right now, sure, if you use these techniques, you can scroll your browser down to mobile and, wow, it looks all great stacked in a mobile layout, but you still sent an 800-pixel wide image to that mobile browser, still sent all of this extra data that, in all likelihood, you may be even hiding with CSS on the mobile version to give them something more friendly. So what we really need is the ability on Drupal's side to detect that we're on a certain browser, it has these capabilities, it's 800 pixels wide, now what do we want to send to them? Via some means of context. And this is where the web services and context core can play a big role, along with the Drupal 8 design initiative. And I know in London, Dries mentioned upcoming the mobile, a mobile-specific Drupal 8 initiative. So between those three, there should be a lot of headway into what this is, serving up faster pages for mobile and the appropriate content. Some resources. I did actually have these all in slides, but there's about 400 links, I think. So on that link is all the information, all the articles that were referenced. And I'm obviously one. And links for all this as well are on the appropriate page. Questions? Omar? Okay. Let's see here. Nope. Okay, so in an Omega subtheme, and actually this is a good point, there's a couple things I forgot to mention. You have basic grid settings, and the default 960 is the basic that actually provides the 1200 pixel 960 720 using that technique. We have the abilities to enable the responsive grid and allow or not allow customizing the viewport meta properties. The viewport tag is what you can use to prevent people from pinching and zooming, and such on devices. And if you're providing an appropriate mobile theme, you usually want to disallow those things. So you can have some basic settings along the initial scale, maximum scale, and minimum of the page if you're allowing it, and then whether or not it's scalable by the user. You set a primary layout where, in Omega, these are dubbed wide, 1,200 pixels, normal, 960, narrow, 720. So what the primary layout does is, for versions of Internet Explorer 6, 7, and 8 that don't understand media queries, they will get that version every time. They don't get responsive. They get a default layout. It's still going to look appropriate because through your responsive theming, it works well. As we scroll down, we can see... It actually looks like the field sets are being hidden with this right now, the labels for it. But for this top one is the narrow layout. And we can see the weight, which is the weight, it's kind of the weight that the CSS is printed on the page. So this one comes first. And we can see the media query that's being used by default to display this content. Actually, in this one, I think I changed it around. I think that's a fluid one on top. But so you can customize this. And this is where if you created your own grid that's only 500 pixels wide, you can set that to be the default. You can do a custom media query just for that through the interface. And then the main real piece... One second. There's some problems with too many nested field sets. And here we go. So under like zone and region configuration, you might be able to see this kind of well. We see header section, content section, footer section. Those are the page TPL elements that get printed out. Inside of the, we'll take a look at the header element, are four zones. User zone provides, by default, two little regions meant to be a tiny nav bar at the top. Branding zone for logo, stuff like that, menu, and then some header blocks. So with each of these zones that we come into, we have configuration options. Force equal heights, provide a full width wrapper for the zone to actually go edge to edge so that you can put some kind of background there outside of the grid. You can force it to be rendered, even if it's empty for some reason. Maybe you need it printed out. You can customize the positioning. This one is the important one. I'm looking at the content zone that has content and sidebars in it, the main meat of the site, and I can choose to put it in one of those different sections on the page, in the header, content, or footer semantic elements. You can weight those. You can choose your 960 columns, how many you want. And with the content first, the primary region is content. So we can see the actual options that are in this group of regions. And so what that means is that on one page you have a three-column layout. And sidebar first and second do have something in it. But you get to another page and sidebar first is empty. Content's going to expand and take up that full width. Quickly add classes to everything. And then for each region, still drilling down, this is where you can force equal heights for the blocks inside of that region. Again, force it to be rendered. You can choose the zone that it goes in. So now I can take and move my content around any of the zones. Prefix and suffix and width, all 960 GS based. And then the weight and position. Need a little help text actually in the theme right now, but the weight is the weight in the source code. So that's the content first. The content is coming up in the source order as the first element. But the position, the visual presentation of it, is second. So one of the sidebars is coming before that. There's definitely a lot more, but that's the quick move things around the standard way you would, either the default block manager, context, anything like that. I'm still playing with my user interface idea that's dragging. It takes all of these crazy form settings because there's truly a lot, and turns it into a jQuery drag-and-drop interface where you can physically drag a region into another zone, where you can take and grab the handle on the side of a region and make it bigger. That's also in the works, and there's talks depending on the who needs it and what exactly they need, that there may be some inclusion of like a context UI there that can place blocks or even do it like live on the front end. Easiest way is you got to switch them somehow. I, on a couple implementations, am using just simply hiding a couple elements just by CSS, like get rid of those first two, don't need them. That's the simple way, still in the markup. Some of the other things I've been presented with in a lot of different discussions about what people want with this kind of thing is the ability to, on that mobile, and this is where kind of I go back to the problems and what hopefully these Drupal 8 core initiatives will help with, is I need to really serve a whole different set of content to the mobile device. I don't want those extra 10 regions. Where right now, I'm still sending, and you know anybody implementing this right now, still sending all the data to the browser. That's a problem. I've got one I've been playing with that's kind of an Ajax-y solution that I use to replace one slider that's a little mobile-friendly touch-enabled, and then when you get out to big, Ajax reloads with a new cool hover-enhanced slider element. That's really one of the biggest issues posed today, still, I think, with responsive, is how do you display the different content? And a lot of it, I mean, for me right now on mobile, I'm fine with display none or visibility hidden and just hide it from display, and we're still having to send it to the browser. Jen? I think the biggest part, like for me, in my own usage, is, you know, I have to put a rotator on every side of design now, and usually it's like full width. So now I'm designing for that desktop at 1,200 pixels, so I need a high quality 1,200 pixel wide image that's, you know, maybe it's a whole meg after image cache has processed it in core. That, I think that's the biggest problem. So I've got 8 images in that rotator. If I just had to send 8 megs to the mobile device, I absolutely agree with that. I'm just going to hide that whole friggin' block with display none, done, on a mobile device. But that's the only situation where, in my conversations, it's really been prevalent, except for some people really talking like they want to just, you know, totally get rid of regions and move regions around in a different context. And that's the thing I think we all... It's a feature coming. It does. Delta is another module I did that takes context, and you can do different layouts of these Omega settings in different, so slash blog or slash home can have a whole different group of these settings that you see here. And that is kind of where I'm looking to hopefully figure something out in Contrib and make that work. Yes. So, yes. Yes. No, it. Yes, that is correct. Then that is how, and Omega is mobile first, but it depends on how you build it. It depends on what you start doing with it. So, yes, in theory, you should load that low res only 240 pixels wide to fit on the smallest mobile screen, and then figure out your method, whether it's a lazy load, whether it's just a jQuery replace the source tag or anything like that to, oh, hey, I am up on a big screen, now I can load that. It's absolutely right. It's a very interesting question, and on the Omega side, I am not handling it. Because it's kind of one of those one-offs, and I can show you a version here on our Drupal Camp site, and there's nothing really on the schedule except like the primary events yet, but this is a table layout, and all right, so yeah, what happens to this when we get down to mobile? I used, this also shows up on iPad portrait mode. I used some CSS that essentially told every type of table element, head, body, tr, td, to display block. So now everything places stacked. When I first did it and got it to work, because the first times I tried the CSS, it didn't work, and then it finally did, and I was like, this is awesome, because this will go all the way down. That's 400 pixels in Chrome, so everything displays, like, essentially wonderfully, but that's another one of those things that, I mean, like the method of fluid images with the max width 100%. There's a few extra things that I had to do once to get a video to scale fluidly properly. This method for tables, those are really things that are huge considerations of each one-off of building a responsive theme. Because, I mean, the camp and con is a perfect example of that session. It really does need to be a table. Semantically, it's tabular data. It should be in such, but you know, it looks best at about 1,000 pixels. Like, so this was my first attempt at really making table scale, and it's okay. Anybody else? Ready for lunch? Wow, that was a big yes. Thank you.